The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. It really does amaze me that the mailbox has been full now for months. And so my assumption is my wife is paying for a phone bill, but she doesn't use the phone. It's my guess. I don't know. You know, she used to talk to me. I did send, you know, I did review the video I did Friday on the Third and Fourth Reich, because I really do think, especially from the perspective of my kids, it may be very helpful for them as they become adults to be able to look at the world and world history, especially, you know, the last 100 years, and the direct applicability to them, how their legacy, where it comes from. Because it's, you know, it's real. So I did send a postcard to Jim Cross Saturday. I said yesterday's voicemail, the Third and Fourth Reich, is something I want my kids to see. You may also find it useful. Because I do think a lot of things were mentioned that were useful. And I mentioned the Triumph of the Will. And I watched it over the weekend again. And it was a reminder. If you listen to Adolf Hitler, you listen to a lot of the things, you know, I was pondering writing. It's just there's so much to do. I was pondering writing a summary on some of the things too, you know, because if you don't think about these things, you look at it and you say, oh, well, that seems so, well, old-fashioned or whatnot. It's black and white. Who cares kind of thing. But again, look through the eyes of someone at the time, because black and white, sure, it's not like, yeah, I mean, obviously what I do is higher quality video because it's easy now. But back then, that was phenomenal. And as I pointed out, the one of the things that I think is so important is it's not that necessarily the technology you use, but things like the framing and setting up the context, the way it's edited together and so forth to give you a flow. The person who did that, a woman, Lenny something, whatever her name is. You see it at the beginning of the movie. Because I've actually, years and years ago, I saw a documentary about her. But the techniques, you can see there was a lot of talent involved. And, you know, because, you know, I was going to mark the time where you do see the camera going up and down that post, as I mentioned, and various things of that nature. Because to look at that and then see that, I think one gives you the artistry aspect of it. But then the other thing, what's said. A couple things were noticed. You know, one was, I was reminded that one gentleman talked about how they had started to build the Autobahn. And of course, the Autobahn is a rather noted highway system in Europe. In Germany, where it's, in general, I think the Autobahn is considered of all the European countries, the nicest highway system. There's a lot of things that were done in order to make it the drive to be able to get one place to another efficiently, safely, and so forth. A lot of those things were well engineered in Germany, far more than other countries. A lot of other countries picked up in what they did, but they did really lead the world, and of course, a lot of that came here. But the way they talked about the Autobahn, and of course, gave thanks to the Führer for getting this thing going. And what I find fascinating, because you don't see this anymore, but if you go back 20, 30, well, 40, 50 years, you'd go down the highways and occasionally the interstates, and you would see not just interstate whatever, but the Eisenhower Interstate System. That's what it was called, the Eisenhower Interstate System. So you had a military leader, Adolf Hitler, as the focus of the Autobahn, you had a military leader who then, of course, became president of the United States as the focus of the U.S. interstate system. You know, the analogy is noticeable. And, of course, their monikers are on you know, taken there. One of the other things I found fascinating was there was a brief comment how the Third Reich was God ordained. I don't remember exactly how he said it. And, you know, I would suggest in the context it was kind of like a the divine right of kings statement. It's fascinating because in my dialogue with Chris today, he brought up the Barman Declaration, which was written, the first draft was done with, what's his name? I have it up here. Karl Barth. He was not the sole author, but he is obviously the major contributor to, and it's short. And what was it? It was a statement saying the Third Reich has essentially taken over the church, the institutional church, as I would state it now, during that era, because the church leadership handed it to him. Not because they came in with guns and knives, but they handed it to him. And I would contend a Senator Johnson at the time started the 501c3 and C4 tax things in order to have a clear delineation between church and state. And the reality is, I don't know if he actually outright said it, but it's basically fairly clear. It was to muzzle the church or control it. And it's been very successful because now a lot of the institutional churches, you know, we can become bold and daring by speaking pro-life or the Supreme Court needs to take this stand on marriage or whatever. I'm sorry, that's you got suckered. You know, again, the obvious one on marriage. So what does it matter what the Supreme Court says? If the Supreme Court says two men can get married, or you can marry a dog or a cat, so what? If you're a follower of Christ, you don't marry a dog or a cat or do a homosexual marriage. You're following Christ. So follow Christ. Don't impose Christ on the rest of the world. Let Christ do that. He's kind of the authority. We're not. And we don't have, he didn't delegate that authority to us. But anyway, but what you do by getting the institutional church to rally around pro-life causes, marriage issues and things of that nature, you made them impotent in so many other respects, because they're spending so much time over here, they think they're doing something right and good. But striving to be obedient to Christ, proclaiming Christ, not just come get into our club, but let's get to know our Creator and strive to be obedient to Him. No, we can't go there because we're too busy trying to change the stand of the Supreme Court. You know, it's in Corinthians, what do I have to do with those outside as those inside you are to judge? So let's work on those inside, not go try to change the laws of the land, because, again, just ignore them. Anyway, that was fascinating. There was also the, the statement in reference to the Third Reich, what we would basically call fascism, grants people freedom. And because I find that fascinating, because, you know, as I point out, democracy and freedom are opposites. fascism and freedom and opposites, communism and freedom and or opposites, because all fascism, collectivism, communism, corporatism, none of them are freedom. Because whatever the collective says, if you say no, I want to be different, you're not free. And that's why I say in the United States, we're a free country. And if you say otherwise, you will be persecuted. Yeah, which there's a problem there, isn't there? So again, that's why when I hear somebody say, you know, we have democracy and freedom. No, you're saying, you're saying opposites anyway. So it was fascinating to watch. And again, I recommend it. I was pondering writing this, you know, but I didn't, it was too much. You know, I did have the one video from Kevork Onassian, who discussed that group that met in Florida. I now have one from Max Blumenthal, Gray Zone, U.S. Nazis Hail Ukraine. Talked about the same group from a slightly different perspective, but that was also very good because, again, points out a lot of the issues. And see, the important thing is, you know, I've studied this. I have, obviously, the family history. And one of the things, I think I stated it Friday, there's the Nazism of the Third Reich. And what seems to be still present, the Nazism seems to be still present in two countries that seems to be the strongest. One is the United States, and it seems to be that is more specifically the white racists seems to be the big drive. There's a secondary drive, it appears, from this group in Florida. You know, they're after the homosexual community, and so there's a problem there, which there were some issues about that during the Third Reich, but that's another thing. But the other one that may be larger is Ukraine. But as the one gentleman, this gentleman Boneface, said, there may be some weakness in them. As I pointed out, it's one thing to get into the club and have the tattoos and one thing. The other thing is to live the doctrine. So you may have the insignias, but do you practice what you preach? You know, that varies. But again, what is my goal? You know, there was someone who pushes this idea, oh, like this one here, you know, protecting the whistleblower, freeing the sex slave, facilitating reconciliation. And, you know, one of the things I pointed out is it is my hope to provide the tools besides protecting the whistleblower, freeing the sex slave, but to find people who are on different sides of an issue that may not be able to communicate with each other. Or, you know, the other example I give is you're the whistleblower and you want to and maybe reconcile with at least one individual, maybe more, of the collective. I want to provide that mechanics to do that, to make it more likely to occur. And obviously, in the case of Ukraine, I've been pursuing this actively. You know, I went and saw the Russian-Ukrainian pastor. That was a year ago. I attempted to contact him again. They've become silent. I do talk with this. I've talked with two Ukrainians at the farmer's market. I didn't see the lady this week, but the week before, I've interacted with her on it. And she seems Ukrainian. And then, of course, I've had two bidirectional dialogues, loose, and hasn't picked up speed yet, with somebody in Donbass and somebody in Moscow. But what I wanted to do is find somebody, that's why the face-to-face, that's why going to the local Russian church, to find somebody Ukrainian who, especially because they're a follower of Christ, who's interested in reconciliation. So, Sunday, I watched a second video from Max Blumenthal. He interviewed a gentleman, a Ukrainian gentleman, who spent a year and a half in prison in isolation, which is torture. Why? Because he's a follower of Christ. And when I listened to the interview, he's apparently now in New York, and he speaks some English, but the interview was done through an interpreter. So, you know, to allow him to speak freely and then interpret. But what I heard that man say, that man's my brother. His focus is on pacifism. He says, I don't want to pick up arms and kill people. And it cost him dearly. The irony is, as he described, he's in New York. He goes to a church, obviously because he's Ukrainian, he went to a church of Ukrainians. And a lot of people in the church wanted to send him back to Ukraine and get him back in prison. And that's the institutional church for you, isn't it? But what I heard from him, not just simply turn the other cheek, bless those who persecute you, and a few other verses in that. I mean, he said it directly. He says, focuses on the same things that I've been focusing on in reconciliation, not seeking revenge, and so forth. I was delighted. So I did some research. And not only have I found more information about him, but a bunch of others. And it is now my hope that I can get contacts on both sides. I have loose contacts on one, but I can get some on the other. And then put it into their hands. I'm not going to fight their battles. I'm not going to convince them of one side or the other. I want to put into their hands the ability for this person to communicate with that person without going to prison, without being killed. Because I think, you know, death does kind of slow down dialogue. And a lot of these people die. Maybe now, you know, what I decided to do is I figured tomorrow I'm going to the farmer's market so the day may not be quite as full. So today I did some work. I just said I'm really intense today on work, and I did. I'm grateful. I did put up the latest version because There was a tweak, and I got it done because I introduced an error, and I got it done. It's back up, so I'm happy about that. But tomorrow I intend to write a bunch of these people and say, okay, this is my next step. This is where I'm at in my development, and I'm needing some other people. I now have some responses from several saying, yes, I'm going to do the testing. So the progress has happened. Obviously, it's not as happening as fast as I want. But, you know, the problem is I'm still working alone. But maybe that'll change. Maybe that'll finally change. Lord willing, it's a constant desire. But the other thing I have to do is write on something else tomorrow, because I also got an envelope in the mail. A letter from, you know, the state. And, you know, again, mailing date, August 25th, postmark, September 5th. you know, it's kind of like, is it just queued up and then it's okay, it's been a couple weeks, you know, let's print off all the things that are queued up and do it. Or do they print it off and they stack it and they say, oh, look, that stack is 3 foot high. Oh, so let's get a few of those. But anyway, so, but the issue is the court issue has been moved from Chattanooga to now within walking distance, which, but I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Because, you know, but anyway, that could have an impact. But one other thing, because I put it on here, because I, you know, I've mentioned Denis Rancourt, because he's excellent in his research about COVID, the masks, and so forth. And, you know, because I have the clip of him where he was interviewed and asked, why was a paper that he published taken down by, you know, the scientific community publisher? Because what he did is he said, look, here are all the studies. This is like 2 years ago, that show masks are useless. They do not prevent viral infections and so forth. And they actually secondarily can cause harm to the wearer. So he did that. And of course he was, oh, you're a bad person for pointing that out. We have no evidence to the contrary because, I mean, there's a whole bunch of studies that show that's true. We don't have any evidence to the contrary, but you're violating what authorities are saying, so you're a bad person. And he was chastised. And one of the things that he said then, the clip I have, is why do people not come to his defense? And the point he made was, if you have invested, you wore the mask, and wearing the mask is something, oh, look, that person's wearing a mask. I mean, it's kind of obvious. And so you've invested in it. And after you've invested in it and say, oops, I was wrong, it's hard to do, especially if you're the only one doing it. Because since it's hard for you, it's going to be hard for your peers. And you're going to be shouted down or things of that nature. So there's only a few who will do it. And obviously, I happen to be one of them. But of course, I have the advantage because, you know, again, I have a mask. It's, you know, it's here. But anyway, I have a mask, but I've never worn one. So it's not as hard for me to say, oh, I changed my mind because I didn't. But, you know, I've changed my mind in other things. And, you know, but that's hard. It's hard to say I was here and now I'm here. It's really hard. That's where this idea of grace comes in. And one person offering another person grace is really hard to do, which goes back to, you know, the Barman Declaration and the way the institutional church during the Third Reich, you know, no, we don't violate. And of course, it's the same thing today. Whether it's simple, our particular church or denomination, or just, you know, we're part of the club. Don't challenge us. You know, those things are obviously quite real. I know this very well. But so, there's an interview with Dan Dix, Press for Truth, did a short, you know, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it was, interview, because, you know, to kind of a refresher, because there is the push to bring the masks back. And, you know, I do think I would agree that it's important to say, look, masks don't work. The evidence, and again, okay. You know, see, the thing is, I did the video about the D-dimer test. See, what was it called? You know, I can, I did it, the pre-vaccinated should take a D-dimer test. The objective is, the D-dimer test is a test for microclots. And the vaccines, especially the early ones, the immunizations, had these the spike proteins and all these kind of things, and what they would do is cause microclots. When you look at a blood clot that you have in a heart that causes a heart attack or something of that nature, it's obvious. You can see with the naked eye if you cut open the cadaver because the body is dead, and it doesn't take a trained eye to say, oh, that doesn't look right. That's clogging the artery or whatever. And when you have a large clot, it obviously makes your heart work harder, brings in fatigue and eventually death, things of that nature. Especially, I think the other thing is if the clot dislodges and then gets to another place where it gets stuck, and a clot will then be blocks the entire artery and then suddenly no blood flow. Well, microclot is, instead of being like in the heart or in a major artery, it's in the tiny little capillaries. So if you have a microclot, who cares? It doesn't matter. And apparently, most of us have them all over the place, all the time. These things happen. Sometimes they clear up, sometimes they don't. I don't know enough of the details of that. But if you have it in large quantity, thousands or millions, apparently one of the most common things is fatigue. And as I pointed out, because this has been demonstrated repeatedly, walking. Tomorrow, I'll probably do a 7-mile hike. If I had the vaccine and had the microclots, not a chance. Because I just simply couldn't do it. It would be way too fatiguing because my body would be just overwhelmed. My body's in good shape. My arteries are clear because I do not have the vaccine and I do not have the microclots, clearly. So what I did is propose, especially to a parent, saying, I love my child. I'm going to go get my child vaccinated because authorities tell me to. However, I suggested, go get a D-dimer test, $25. At least that's what it is here at the local hospital. You just say, I want one, and they'll do it for you. They don't give you any reading, whatnot. Just here's the results. Do it before and afterwards to your child and find out whether or not you've damaged potentially permanently your child. Gee, would this have an impact on people? So I proposed that. This was back in January of 2022, a long time ago. I'm getting long. The view count on BitChute is 830 views. I would suggest probably 90% of those are not real, at least. But anyway, the point is, this is a way that you, without any authority, you can determine whether or not you have microclots, whether or not the vaccine harmed you. In the same way, CO2 sensors are relatively modest, easy to acquire. I don't know the price, but a lot of people, you can get them fairly easy. So, do you want to know if a mask causes you harm? You look at the OSHA, occupational safe and health, whatever it is. Government agency, they set up standards of air quality within buildings and so forth. And they do, for example, have a particular CO2 level. You get up to a particular level and you say, this is not appropriate, unsafe, toxic kind of things. So you put on a mask and you put the CO2 sensor, behind the masks, so it's getting the air that you're breathing. And watch your CO2 level. And normally, all the people I've seen who have done the tests themselves or had done it to, their kids and whatnot, their CO2 level gets to the point of being toxic. So, you know, it's the kind of thing saying, all right, these authorities have said to me, wear a mask to protect grandma and to protect you, because they're safe and effective. And you can do a test on your own to show that what you're doing is causing self-harm. Because it does indeed, you know, the common analogy that's given is the complaints from a lot of the medical staff is headaches when wearing masks, because your CO2 level is inappropriate. And so that's you know, a rational argument when somebody says, why don't you wear a mask? One, I do not want to do self-harm. Two, show one study that shows that they protect others when you wear a mask. Good luck. It's simply not there. Because again, I went and looked at the CDC website early on when the first wear the mask thing came out. I looked and said, here's a list of studies. And that's what they, you know, there's two things. One, it's like the terms of service. Here's a list of terms of service. Whole bunch of mumbo jumbo. Most of it is it's just that, just literal garbage. You know, they could put the lorem ipsum, random text in there, and it's kind of like, who cares? Because people don't read it. But they gave you this long list, and I looked at bunches of them, and they were either non-applicable. Well, here's a study, has this fancy name, doesn't apply at all, but it's listed. Or it was a study and the sample count was 2, things of that nature. It's kind of, and what they tested for was not relevant. Finding a large-scale controlled randomized study in that list wasn't there. It simply wasn't there. So they give you a whole bunch of supposed evidence, but it's not evidence that someone who is a serious researcher would look at that and say, that doesn't help me. It simply is garbage. So that's, you know, again, your government at work. Those kind of things will probably come back. And I think it's important to prepare people. And I'm grateful to see that some people are. Because the vaccine, the newest ones, will probably cause microclots again or other things. The evidence of a decline in birth rate relative to vaccines is overwhelming. It's huge. And, you know, early studies show that would be probably happen. And now that we're a couple years into it, birth rates have plummeted, both domestically and especially in Western Europe. Just absolutely plummeted. So yes, did they save lives? Yeah, by not being born. Anyway, so you know the eugenicists are succeeding. They are succeeding. But that's a secondary issue. The important thing is, it's in my postcard to George, telling him that I'm now at 88,000 jumping jacks left. 88 days. And I want him to join me. Still my desire. But I did the thing Friday to encourage my kids. Nazism is not just something you read about. It is literally in our family's past, as well as, you know, U.S. soldiers. So we, our personal family history via me and my parents, is being on both sides. And again, there's a difference between someone who is in the club. It's like, oh, I'm part of the church. Christ. Is that Jesus Christ you're talking about? Is it? He played a major role, didn't he? Wasn't he one of the? Didn't he have a part? that's a huge part of the community, the Christian community. And I would suggest within the Third Reich, part of the Nazi community was a whole bunch of those too. Oh yeah, I'm part of the National Socialists. And again, National Socialists, socialism, literally socialism. But so you know, it's important to understand that, understand how it's morphed into what we have domestically, how it's morphed into what we have in Ukraine. Look at the difference between the true believers and those that have the insignias and those that, you know, it's simply them. Well, I'm just going to be part of the club just so I can get along. It's no different, again, in the institutional church. I get along. I'm part of the club. Or I have more than just the insignias. I believe it. And, you know, that's what my obviously want my kids to be, the true believer in Christ, not in Nazism. There's a problem there. But then again, the other thing that happened, I had some contacts, sort of, some hope, because I saw people in the Russian culture within what some people say is Ukraine, what used to be Ukraine, what may or may not be Ukraine, depending upon your perspective. But see people who say, it's not the politics, I follow Christ. I see that in Donbass, Donetsk specifically. And now I've seen several Ukrainian saying, I follow Christ. Christ is my Lord. Not the state. I'm encouraged. And Lord willing, I'll be able to write all these people tomorrow. Writing is so hard. It's so time consuming. But anyway, I want my kids to know this. I want so desperately to get someone else to join me on this. I am grateful I now have I have several people that have accounts on the South African server. And I did some that came back up today because there were some problems. And I'm hoping that this yields someone who say, yes, I'm going to push it on the business end. Someone's going to push it. I'm going to push it for a particular ministry objective, whatever. I'm going to do the PR, whatever, because the technology takes a lot of time. Anyway, I want to encourage my kids to use their mind to be able to say, oh, I'm going to follow the evidence. Masks are stupid. I'm going to follow the evidence. I'm not going to take the vaccine because I don't want microclots and the various other problems. I don't want to die young. Again, you know, the death rate of the young went up, what is it, 130 times for whatever it is. Anyway, I mean, it's noticeable. I don't want my kids to fall into that trap. And I want them to be able to encourage their peers. I want them to be able to say, yes, I can tell you why evolution, the Big Bang and whatnot, is a fallacy. Not because I can shout louder, because I have evidence. And I can tell you why I believe and trust in the Lord Jesus Christ, because I have a mind. And because of his grace, first of all, he's given me the grace to see him and the mind to be able to be ready to give an answer for the hope that is within me. I want that for my kids. Lord willing, this week, I do pray. Because I've written a whole bunch of people. I do pray somebody, whether they are from Ukraine or are in Ukraine, will respond to me and say, yes, let's do this. Hope came. There's another hope I want. There's this lady I'm fond of. Chris celebrated his 62nd birthday Saturday. He's a young guy. And one of the things he talked about is he had the joy of having one of his grandkids, celebrating his birthday, come up to him and say, I forget the term it was used. It's not granddaddy, but basically, granddaddy, I love you. And he described how that makes him melt. And he said, I pray one day you'll be able to hear that too. I would love that. I don't have any anticipation for that. But boy, would I love that. My lady, my wife, especially would like to hear, I love you from you. A reality, I love you from you. But be 100% clear. I do love you and want you back.